The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Donut Racing Show, everybody, where we bring a bedazzled denim vest mindset to the dripping in diamonds podium of Formula One racing. I hope that vest has some sort of fuzzy liner because it's cold here in Los Angeles. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined by my two co-hosts, my favorite motor journalists. We got Elizabeth Blackstock and Alanis King. How are you guys doing this fine day?
It's a lot warmer here in Texas than it is in Los Angeles.
It probably is.
It's nice and sunny outside, like clear skies. We're doing well over here.
That's great. We had a really big shoot on Thursday of last week out at Willow Springs Raceway, a famously hot and dry track.
Mm-hmm.
It snowed at the racetrack. It's cold. I'm wearing a hoodie. But this week, we're talking Formula One. Recaps? Question mark?
This week, we're going to talk about the newest season of Drive to Survive, and then we're going to talk about our predictions for the upcoming season based on preseason testing.
That's right. Prestige Television, it's back. I love that they released just this the week before race week. It's how I know that the season's about to start. We all binged it. Well, I had to go up to my family in San Luis Obispo and hang out with them. So in between, I stayed up late some nights watching this and got up early this morning to finish out the season. Also, dear listener, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about everything. But honestly, if you watched last year's season, 2022 racing season, that is, you know what happens. But if not, if this is your first time listening to the show, to DRS, well, prepare to be spoiled. Overall, what'd you guys think?
I had a lot of thoughts about it.
Yeah, I had a lot of thoughts too. I mean, I feel like maybe the appropriate way to do this is just go episode by episode and then do like a recap of how we feel at the end.
Let's do it.
Okay, so the first episode, I thought we started pretty well, right? We had Mattia Binotto and Günther Steiner in their tiny little car, just like driving around, picking grapes, and going to a winery, and
it
we started
like
well.
It was like a Pixar movie.
Two ridiculous-looking men who look like cartoon characters.
Mattia, as we'll see, becoming sort of like the protagonist of this season, in a way. We spent a lot of time with Mattia Binotto.
My first note says, it's good that they let Mattia get a wine ad in before he had to quit his job. Because they went to, I think it was like Mattia's winery or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, so happy for him. He got like a little advertisement in. And then I was so sad. He was talking to Günther and he was like, this is a nice job, isn't it, Günther? And I'm like, my guy, it is not your job anymore.
That was horrifying foreshadowing, honestly. Like, they did him dirty with that one.
Yeah, that was a rough watch. That was tough.
I mean, one of my favorite moments was a quote from Christian Horner when he said, the best way to become unpopular in this business is to start winning. That's a true sentiment, but
that's
also
true.
I thought it was like very annoying coming from Christian Horner.
It doesn't help.
No, and I think last season of the Donut Racing Show, I think I came in with a positive sentiment towards Christian Horner because I loved his British supervillain antics. But I think that this season has almost pushed it over the edge for me. This man is so smarmy, over the top. He loves the cameras. He loves the fact that he knows he's going to get a good edit on Drive to Survive because he is like
he's
one of the best
it.
Characters on this show. He hams it up.
Yeah.
As we'll see in the next episode, in episode 2.
I was wondering if he gets paid, like if he gets a commission for the amount of airtime he gets, or when he signs this Netflix contract, he's like, I need exactly this many minutes of the show. It just feels like the only way.
I think that looking at Christian Horner's life overall, where he was first like a middling race car driver, goes into the management side of the sport, and then marries a Spice Girl, like that's the arc of his life.
I also did this. Like, why are you critiquing me?
This is the arc of Christian Horner's life. I think that becoming a reality TV star is also something on his checklist that he wanted.
Fair.
And he's loving it.
No, I completely agree. And I thought what was interesting was we start this episode with our little Pixar thing, and then we introduce Drive to Survive with some of the opinions on Drive to Survive from our different characters. And one of them is Toto Wolff, and he's like, this is more close to Top Gun than a documentary. And I'm like, I haven't seen Top Gun, but that seems like a little extreme. I don't know. It seems a little extreme. And then my favorite part was Max Verstappen, who has been notoriously loud about not liking how Drive to Survive portrays stuff and like not wanting to participate. This man sits in the chair and whoever is behind the camera says, how do you feel about being in the chair? And Max just kind of pauses and he looks around and he goes, it's quite comfortable.
That was such a good moment.
It really was. And they meant like the chair for Drive to Survive. How do you feel about being here? And he talked about how comfortable the chair was. And I really don't think we give Max Verstappen enough credit for being funny.
And they really did a great job showing it. Like, there were those kind of clips of everyone at the start of the season peeking into each other's cars.
Yes.
And they're peeking into the Red Bull, and Max, I think, says, like, that has to be Checo's because the ass is so big.
The part of the first episode where all the people are given their opinions, like, and it's very self-referential,
yes,
obviously, and kind of relies on you having watched previous seasons,
yes,
or knowing the driver. This many times in, they've done it, like, 3 times also. Like, the past couple seasons have started the same way. And honestly, I don't know if it really works for me anymore as a I don't know. It's just, it feels a little too self-referential, in my opinion.
It was fun at first, and then they keep doing it. And now I'm like, well, okay, we all know, like, it's a reality show, and it's fine. But, like, you're kind of almost overdoing it now.
Agreed.
I actually enjoyed some of the self-referential stuff because it was funny in hindsight. Like, Daniel Ricciardo sits down and he's like, I'm in a good place. And I'm like, you're not, Daniel. You are getting fired. They're going to pay out your contract, but you are getting fired in like 9 months here. And it's just like, it's so sad. And Mattia saying he likes his job. And you're just like, no.
That's called storytelling, you know?
But, you know, we're having some fun. We're introducing the characters. And, you know, I honestly, given some of the things they left out the rest of the season, I was glad that they put in the Nikita Mazepin getting fired after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Like, there were a lot of negative things that Drive to Survive either glossed over or completely did not mention this season. And they probably talked about this in decent detail because it wasn't Formula One's fault. It was someone else's fault. Yeah. But they did talk about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which ultimately led to the Haas Formula One team losing Uralkali, a Russian fertilizer company, as a sponsor, and thus losing the driver who Uralkali paid for and replacing him with Kevin Magnussen. And it was really interesting to watch Günther Steiner. He is...
Oh, it certainly was.
Yeah, he's just walking around and he's like, no more Russians. I'm done with Russians until I go from this planet. And I'm like...
Yeah. that had me laughing pretty hard. As far as setup episodes go, I mean, pretty good. Like you said, if you're a big fan of the sport already and you know where these storylines go, like I said, that's storytelling, man. You know.
Oh, for sure.
It's dramatic irony.
Oh, for sure.
As you would learn.
I thought it was really funny. We played into some of the memes about Drive to Survive, and I can't tell if it was on purpose or not. So a very common Will Buxton meme, and Will Buxton is one of the talking heads. A very common meme is that Will Buxton will say a sentence, and then he will basically say that sentence backwards. It's like, if you are driving the race car, you are racing the car. And it's like, wow, thank you so much, Will Buxton. Like, that was wild. Mm-hmm. And here we are in the first episode. And Will said, and I think this was the first episode. It's in my notes for the first episode. He says, you want to start from the front because it means you will have 19 other drivers starting behind you.
Yep.
And I was like, yep. Are you trolling? Or like, did you, mm-hmm. do you just do this naturally? I really couldn't tell.
This season in particular turns out to be pretty interesting in that way, because it is very self-referential, making yes. fun of itself, poking, like saying, hey, we know what we're doing. But also, it does seem like they've taken some feedback from the audience. Last season, if you remember, or if you don't, the last season of Drive to Survive, which focused on 2021, caught a lot of flack for misleading edits and things of the like. Out of context quotes relating to unrelated events. And I think the Drive to Survive team, to their credit, did take that feedback and delivered, I think, a little bit more grounded season this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it moving. The next one focused on the Mercedes team and Toto Wolff's struggle with not meeting expectations.
Yeah, and I think this was the episode I was most looking forward to because it was most hyped up, because there was this whole team principle, like everybody sat in musical chairs and faced each other and fought about random things. And I was so looking forward to this because this feeds into my like reality TV drama mm-hmm. needs, and they're all just sitting around yelling at each other. I was so excited for this.
It was such a good part where you're seeing all of these personalities and also, like, why some team principals play such a bigger role in this series than other ones. Like, Christian Horner and Toto Wolff are both characters in their own right. Mm-hmm. That's why we see so much of them. So to see them, like, in their natural habitat going back and forth, Toto, like, raising his hand and being like, I have the receipts. I have it printed off. Like, I know that your driver doesn't like your car. It was just so funny.
And
it
then,
was so good.
Yeah, Christian Horner did his version of reading Toto for filth. By, yeah, telling him to fix his car instead of trying to change the rules, basically.
Yeah.
Again, like I mentioned earlier, like, that is Christian Horner seizing the opportunity of reality stardom. He knows what he's doing. He's hamming it up.
He's pointing out that there are cameras in the room.
Yes.
Like, he was the one who was like, we shouldn't do this in front of the cameras. And you know he's actually like, yeah, yeah. let's keep doing it. Let's keep
yeah,
going.
Yeah, exactly. No. He kind of girl boss and gate kept and gaslit Toto in that moment, but yeah, by making it seem like Toto was the one. What a little bastard that guy is. I was sick of him.
Everyone was kind of going with Christian in this meeting, though. Everyone yeah. was pretty anti-Toto.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've got Mercedes dominating for like 8 years straight, and then all of a sudden it's like, actually, we're doing bad now. Now suddenly it's like, what do? We have to get everyone else to kind of change.
Well, what I thought was really funny is you have a few people who are just like fighting each other head to head, just, oh, let's go. And then you have some of the people who are just sitting around laughing. Like, Jos Capito was in there. And mm-hmm. What was his exact
Williams
quote?
Williams team principal.
Yes. He said, yes. I'm just watching the drama because he doesn't have any investment in this. His mm-hmm. car is last. It's so slow. It doesn't matter. He's just watching it play out. And it's like, this is just Housewives, pretty much. And you have Gunther Steiner and Mattia Binotto. They're just laughing. And they're and Gunther's like, it's time to go porpoising. Oh no, it was really funny, honestly. I enjoyed it a lot.
It was a
I did
good
too
moment,
I think that was
sure.
one of the highlights of the series. Like, that was the stuff that I want to see when we have, like, when you're telling me there was going to be behind the scenes access, this is the stuff that I want yeah. to see afterward.
Yes, exactly. I agree. I felt like this was one of the more genuine behind the scenes looks we got, because we just got to kind of watch everyone be mad at each other. Now, it was kind of a weird setup because they were all just like sitting in like chairs looking at each other. And I don't yeah. know if Netflix was like, all right, boys, come on. We need you to have an argument.
I think it was a typical like FIA. I mean, Stefano Domenicali was there like pre-race weekend. Get like, here's what we're doing. A briefing. I don't think they had to play it up that much. I don't know if it was that genuine because Christian Horner was hamming it up for the cameras so hard.
But he does that all the time. Like, he would do that in his own
backyard.
These
cameras give him permission to be even worse. I am going hard on Christian. I don't want to make it sound like I dislike Christian. I think he is, like, obviously he's very experienced. I would love to hang out with him and learn from him. I'm just saying, in the context of this reality show, it's a lot.
It's a little much. it's a little much. We don't need to hear Christian's opinion about everything, but we're going to hear it. We absolutely are.
My opinion on Christian Horner is that the look on his face, like the perpetual look on his face, he looks like you share an apartment complex with him and he just keeps stealing your packages and he's so thrilled about it. Like, he just has this little, like, mischievous look on his face all the time. Like, he looks like he's getting away with something. And it's just so uncomfortable. But you know what? I respect it. Good for him.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good little episode there. Let's move on to our next one.
So, episode 3 I thought was really fun because we focused on Ferrari. And in 2022, Ferrari was, like, our big laughable but also kind of sad story. And
they were the big hope of, like, when we started out the season. I mean, always, yeah. But this season, it looked like they had the reliability and the speed that Red Bull didn't initially have.
Yeah.
So I didn't think they really talked about that enough in the episode, yeah. But it was fun to at least kind of get to know the drivers a little bit more, despite the fact that it was immensely crushing to watch both of their hopes and dreams die by the time we got to Miami.
You know, I couldn't actually focus on how crushing it was because all I could focus on was I was trying to place what Carlos Sainz's cadence of speaking reminds me of, because he has this very unique cadence of speaking. It is like he's in Parks and Rec, and he is like his own character in Parks and Rec.
Oh my God.
And he has to like stick to this. And
makes sense. Yeah. The Ferrari drivers definitely come off very likable in this episode. That might have to do with the fact that their whole storyline for the Ferrari episode is Ferrari's failure. I think the editors did a really great job. The directors and editors, I think, did a great job kind of illustrating Ferrari's failing downward arc throughout the season. I think that came across very well. Something else that came across well, do you guys remember last season when Miami, during the Miami race, the lead up to that was like just a lot of memes about the fake marina and stuff like that?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of what the memes really overshadowed, I think, how cool Miami was, because I'm watching this episode and I'm like, dang, a race in Miami is actually really sick, and the track looked really cool. I didn't really realize how cool at the time. I think we even recorded an episode about Miami, and all we could talk about was the stupid marine fake boats and all that. So I want to issue my first public apology of the episode. I want to issue my first public apology to the Miami Grand Prix, because that actually was pretty sick. So thank you, DRS or DTS, for showing me that. We also get one of the best quotes of the season in this Ferrari episode, and that's Carlos Sainz saying, quote, "I'm Spanish, I'm gonna go full Latino mode." Which killed me. I loved it.
That was certainly something.
We're gonna see some banners, I think. Full Latino mode. I love it.
You know, no, my favorite quote from this episode was actually not from a Ferrari person. It was from our guy, Christian Horner. And he was talking about Ferrari, and he said it was gut-wrenching. The Ferrari storyline of last season was gut-wrenching. And he tried to pretend like he was so sad about it. And he was not. He wasn't. At all.
You can, like, see the little glimmer in his eyes where he's like,
He's taking the piss, as the Brits would say, I think.
Absolutely.
Definitely taking the piss with that one.
There were so many good, like, side-eye moments of this episode, especially, like, I am not a Caitlyn Jenner fan in the slightest. However, hearing her tell Christian Horner to his face on camera that the Ferraris are so good for Formula One might have been the funniest own I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was a pretty good moment.
It's second only to the two children later in the series who Christian Horner's like, who's your favorite driver? And they're like, oh, we love Lewis. And he's like, what about Max and Checo?
Oh,
and they're like,
so
oh,
funny.
My granddad likes them.
That was so funny. And
just slam dunked.
I was like, I had like a jump scare. I was very surprised when they're at Miami, basically around all of the cars, and the cars are, I guess, fired up. I can't exactly remember what was going on. And suddenly we just panned to Paris Hilton and she's like, that's hot. And I was like, what? Where did she come from? It's like continuing the Parks and Rec thing. It's just like, oh, there's Paris Hilton.
Our girl Paris Hilton makes two appearances in this episode. And yeah, the that's hot line is in reference to a pit stop in which the Red Bull pit team in particular shows off their insanely fast pits.
Incredible
skills. Great episode. Very star-studded episode. And also, if there's only one episode I think I would show somebody from this season, it'd probably be this one. Okay. Leading into
They did a great job showing the heartbreak that Carlos Sainz had about his like first win and the issues that took place at Silverstone specifically regarding
Ferrari. Oh my god.
Ferrari.
I mean that's in my notes on my phone right here. Watching that back, I already knew what was going to happen, but still it's just like, what the hell were they thinking in Britain?
Yeah.
And yeah, so honestly,
I feel that way about the English all of the time.
But seriously, hats off. Like, this is, I think, one of the better episodes of the season. It's not my favorite, but I think it is one of the better ones. So hats off to the Drive to Survive team for this episode because it's really, really good. Let's move on to our next episode here. Episode 4, Like Father, Like Son.
This one was rough.
This one was really rough. I was actually excited going into this episode because we're starting to see the Gunther Steiner versus Mick Schumacher conflict, which felt pretty random last season. Like, we get toward the end of the season and we start to realize, oh, Haas is going to fire Mick Schumacher. And then we get these whispers.
And it's not just that they're going to fire him. It's that there's so much animosity surrounding that firing. It was almost like it was personal.
Yes, we get these whispers that Gunther just like apparently really is not a fan of Mick Schumacher. And we're trying to figure out what's going on. So once we start getting this insight into the Gunther and Mick relationship, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to learn more about what happened. And then it kind of just ended up being very anti-Mick.
Yeah. It didn't feel like we got the context necessarily that helped Gunther make that decision of why he didn't like him, aside from the fact that they did make Mick look very incompetent in a lot of ways.
Yes, they did.
There was specifically a Saudi Arabia edit where I don't know if this is actually what happened, but someone comes on the radio to tell Mick to be careful, and it immediately cuts to him crashing.
Yes.
It's like them saying that is what caused his crash almost, but like the editing on that one was just... That was really tough.
And
it was like, I don't think he's incompetent the way that you're making him seem.
Yes, I completely agree. They made him really seem like kind of a crash test missile who was like costing a lot of money and very incompetent. Mm-hmm. And they specifically did this by showing two crashes in a row where they were communicating within the team and on the show that Mick was just like driving outside of his bounds and trying to push the car too hard and being irresponsible. And I really, maybe I'm wrong, but I really feel like at the time when these crashes happened, that was not really the conversation. Like, no one was really saying like, oh, Mick's just incompetent. I really don't feel like that was going on. Do y'all feel like that was going on?
It was more, I think, the sentiment that like Mick is trying to live up to a very high set of standards because his father was a 7-time world champion and arguably one of the best racers in F1 history, and that it was like, it was unfortunate that he was in a bad car where he wasn't able to prove himself, because Mick did very well in the lower tiers, like Formula 2. Like, he did, it wasn't like he was a bad driver who just lucked into this seat.
Right. I think this episode kind of illustrates the problem with Drive to Survive that has been, you know, every time a season comes out, this discussion comes up. It's like, how much of the show can you really trust and make conclusions based off the show? Because like you said, using an edit to make it look like a radio message made Mick crash, I don't think there's anybody on the planet that would happen to, you know, like, but
yeah,
you're trying to make the audience think that that's what happened. Also, on top of that, just to kind of back out for a second, we ourselves are Formula One media members, and we're trying to draw conclusions from a show that we know is entertainment.
Yes. And I think what was really weird was there was just such a such a strong get Mick out of here sentiment in this episode. And that was that was shown with the radio message, but also with just like ambient shots of crews reacting in the moment. Like maybe Mick binned it at one point, and we would show a crew member being like, oh, again. And it's like, that happens in the moment, but that's not actually how people feel. And if you've been around racing crews and you've been around racing, or you've been on a race team, you will say a lot of stuff in the moment that is not accurate.
I mean, that's something you see all the time in comments, whether it's NASCAR or IndyCar or F1. It's like people be like, oh, I don't like this driver. He's such a hothead behind the wheel. Like, he's so disrespectful. You know, a guy like Noah Gragson or something.
Yes.
And you're like, you try having a conversation about a problem you're having at 200 miles an hour. You know, like, you're not going to come across as friendly, most likely.
Just like adding to the anti-Mick sentiment, it was really weird that we didn't get much of Mick's story. You know, I believe when Mick was younger, he raced under his mother's name because he didn't want to be compared to his father. We didn't learn about that. We also didn't learn anything about Mick not only being under Sebastian Vettel's wing, we got like 2 seconds of that, but also the fact that Mick was one of the drivers on the grid who was wearing protest t-shirts, who was like campaigning for like pride shirts and all kinds of stuff like that. Like, he was actually showing a lot of support for communities. And I felt like that kind of got ignored in the public eye, but it also got ignored on Drive to Survive, which was weird. We could have shown Mick as more of a person in this.
We're going to talk about the next two episodes, episodes 5 and 6, both Pardon My French and Nice Guys Finish Last, which I think they're two of my favorite episodes in this season. Together, they stand out as probably the best of the season.
So episode 5 and 6 are kind of like part one and part two because they focus on multiple teams. So we start out with Alpine in episode 5, and then we transition into the Alpine-McLaren drama of last year. And basically what that drama was Alpine announced that Oscar Piastri, a junior driver, was coming up to drive for them in Formula One. Oscar Piastri goes, I'm not driving for Alpine in Formula One. Talk to you all later. And then later we find out that Oscar is going to McLaren. After that, Fernando Alonso announces that he is leaving Alpine for Aston Martin. And I think what this episode gave us insight into was not only the Oscar Piastri thing, but the fact that Alpine seemed to want to retain Fernando Alonso, because we see these clips of Otmar talking to Fernando and he's like, buddy, we're going to have news soon. We're going to have news soon. We're going to have news soon. And then we just cut to this clip of Fernando and he's like, bye bye. And then he leaves. So that's what these two episodes are covering. And they kind of just blend together because it's multiple teams. What Drive to Survive did not do for Mick Schumacher, they did for Otmar Szafnauer, like times 10.
Yeah. We got the best Netflix profile of like your friend's dad that's ever been put on TV. This man wears vests. He drinks beetroot juice. He has a doodle dog named Bear. Yeah. Like, this man is your friendly neighbor.
Yes.
Who has a big model train in his garage. And he is also a Formula One team principal. I did not expect that we would get such a deep dive on Otmar Szafnauer, but I'm glad we did.
There was a lot that I thought was missing from this season when you compared it to previous seasons, and those deep dives into the characters themselves were one of those. But we got so much with Otmar that it was, like, for me, that was the highlight of the season, was getting to learn about this, like, nice little gentleman who's practicing his French in his car and who irons his own team kit and all of that. Like, it was just super, super cute. And I was like, okay, like, in the past, I guess I never had a reason to think about him as a character, but because of the situation with Oscar Piastri and Alpine and McLaren, all that whole fiasco, it kind of called for it. And it was, I think we got to learn about who he was and why he seemed to almost take that personally, that Oscar Piastri left and that Fernando Alonso also left.
Yeah. Ouch.
The next episode also deals with Daniel Ricciardo leaving McLaren or being ousted at McLaren for Oscar Piastri, who Alpine originally had that agreement with. But like, you can tell the frustration, like you said, Liz, like he does take it personally that Oscar is leaving Alpine. But that's also because that it's like repeating, you know, when Alpine was called Renault, they had Daniel Ricciardo, who they built their entire program around, and then he leaves. Alpine is now building a program around Oscar Piastri and Esteban Ocon, and then Piastri leaves. So must be very frustrating for the world's biggest fan of tufted vests. So I don't know. These episodes are awesome.
I thought the most interesting part was like the silly season chaos that we got to see really laid out in full here, where it's covering McLaren, Alpine, yes, and Aston Martin. So you've got all of these moving parts that are coming together that it takes two episodes to get through. Mm-hmm. Well, why did this seat open up at McLaren that would enable Oscar Piastri to get there? Now what are we doing over here? Like, why can we have Gasly go to Alpine? Like, it was fascinating to see that uncovered, and it felt like the way that the editing was done created a really great story, and the storytelling of this was part of what I think Drive to Survive should be doing a lot more of, was that we get to see all of these things laid out. We get to follow the storylines. It was interesting.
Yeah, yes. I think that, like, the storytelling on this show, I think really highlights the difficulty of making a show like this as well. Because, like, you got to have your cameras in the right place at the right time. You got to, the teams have to allow you access to get that footage at the right place at the right time. So as a result, you get episodes like the Mick episode where it feels a little like, as an audience member or fan of Mick, it feels a little unfair. But then you'll switch gears into this 5 and 6 where it does feel like a very cohesive story. And I think that just like, again, I wouldn't want to have to be the one directing or editing this show because it must be hard as hell.
Yeah, I think my main note, aside from Otmar's personality in this episode, I actually had a question. And Otmar's personality, my notes are, I thought it was so funny that this man was doing windmills with his arms as he was walking into the garage. Like, as if he's going to do anything with his arms as the team principal. I thought
he's changing the tires.
Like, yeah, maybe. Like, he needs to step in and, like, help. I don't know. I thought that was so funny. And then in the midst of this, like, really intense Alpine McLaren drama, they put this man on the screen and he goes, as Yogi Bear says, it ain't over till it's over. And I was like, what?
Yogi Berra, again, the baseball player. Yeah.
And then one thing I found to be a little bit confusing was, I thought it was so cool that we got this McLaren Alpine insight during this episode. But also, were those crews there? Were those film crews really there at the exact time that this drama starts unfolding? Like, Alpine posts the tweet and the Netflix crew happens to be with Zach Brown. Like,
So here's what I think, and I'm going actually to ask the production company to confirm this, because in the past, when like Christian Horner calls Checo to re-sign him, that was something that Christian Horner came to them and was like, I want to do this on camera. I want to do this on the show. I want to
make me a star.
Well, he's like, I want to do it in the chair. So he does it in the chair. And I think that was kind of what they had going in this situation, where like, they knew when Daniel Ricciardo was going to be retiring so they could be able to get camera crews in and watch that happen. Yeah. And I think like these things are all going on behind the scenes. I'm sure that they're being reached out to, like, the crews for the teams to say, hey, this big thing is happening. Let's get this on camera. If only in a way to, like, help control what they're putting out into the world.
The timing seemed too good.
So, yeah, episode 6 deals with more of the McLaren side of the Oscar Piastri kind of debacle, we'll say. Real quick, after coming away from these two episodes, I still, at the time, it looked like Alpine, like, really bungled and fumbled the bag super hard and, like, they looked like idiots at the time, I'd say, especially with their tweet about announcing Oscar and all that. But now in retrospect of these episodes, maybe it's a result of like a favorable edit on Otmar Schaffnauer's part, but like
I'm not so sure
anymore, especially with like him saying so much stuff about building a program around Oscar Piastri.
I think he specifically said we spent $4 million on
him. They bring that out a couple times.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not so sure anymore. I wonder if they tried to orchestrate it in a way that would make Alpine look stupid, because later on in a meeting between Otmar and Zach Brown, CEO of McLaren, Zach Brown's like, you know, this would look really bad for you to bring a lawsuit against Oscar Piastri. How about you think about that? I feel like that's showing the hand a little too much.
Yeah.
You know, like that's true that it would look bad, but also it's like you had that right in your pocket right at that time. I'm not so sure. So Alpine did fumble the bag, but also maybe I was a little too hard. So a second apology to Alpine. Maybe Ouch. I was too hard on you in a previous episode of the show for
the
dropping
Nolan
the
apology tour.
Well, I've got a couple more.
Oh, damn. We're still going.
So great episodes. Very sad to see Daniel also leave the team. Which brings me to my third apology as we close out these two episodes here.
No.
I think in the last season of DRS last year, I was pretty hard on Daniel. There's a lot of times where I said, hey, Daniel's kind of losing his touch a little bit. I want to publicly apologize to you, Daniel Ricciardo. I'm sorry I said that, because it kind of, especially with preseason testing, as we might get to at the end of this episode and how slow the McLaren is, I think I was too hard on you and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think some of my other just very quick takeaways from this episode where I liked that Fernando decided to own being the bad guy. Like, Fernando Alonso was like, I'm the villain. Bye-bye. I'm the bad guy. I thought that was actually really endearing, and Christian Horner could probably learn from that. Like, if Christian Horner was just like, I'm the bad guy, I think we would like him a lot better, because it's just like, oh, self-awareness. Good job. Daniel Ricciardo, I think he kept his spirit with his FEA writing on the little...
The slate.
The slate. Yeah. And we can't really use those words on here, but yeah.
Frick 'em all.
And my last note.
He also, I believe he had that on his helmet at some points during
yes,
the year,
did.
Too.
Oh, good for
yes,
him.
Good for him.
And my last note was that we see in this like B-roll from one of the paddocks, I think, everybody's just walking by and there's this croissant stand and they have like chocolate croissants. And they keep offering them to people. And all the drivers are like, no, I can't eat carbs. No. And then Yuki Tsunoda walks by and they go, do you want a chocolate croissant? And
he's like,
yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
And he just takes the chocolate croissant and goes, he's the only one who does. And I really respect that. Thank you so much, Yuki.
The next episode, Hot Seat, which deals with Checo Perez and Monaco.
This one was intense, Nolan. Like, and there was a lot that they didn't include that was also intense. But just like the whole vibe was really intense. So this was Monaco, and we're focusing on Red Bull, and it was weird, honestly. I'll let Elizabeth talk about the Checo PR machine first.
Yeah, so this was what stuck out to me most about this episode. And this moment actually completely reframed the way that I watched the season.
Yes.
And then when I went back and watched it again, I was watching through this lens. So as they've got Sergio Perez in the hot seat for his interviews with the Drive to Survive crew, all of a sudden he starts talking like, my family is everything. I love my wife. It's so sad that I don't get to see my kids. And here's a photo of my kids on my phone. And I was like, they don't really do this with any other driver. They do mention Kevin Magnussen and his family in the
and
first
episode. And his adorable
episode.
Baby that they throw into the water.
Swim, baby, go.
It's awesome.
And like, I loved that because there was a narrative purpose there to show that Kevin Magnussen has evolved and changed.
Since he was last on the grid, yes.
Mm-hmm. There was no narrative purpose for this random aside of Checo talking about how much he loves his family and no reason for us to see photos and video of his wedding. Except if you recall, at the Brazilian Grand Prix, there was a little bit of a Red Bull fiasco that happened where Max Verstappen was asked to let Checo by
because
they
had already
competing
won the championship
for a podium. Yeah, Verstappen already had the championship. Checo still needed to secure that second place in the championship. Red Bull already has all of the points they need. Max was just asked, you know, hey, let's let Checo get some points. Well, he didn't do it. Obviously, both drivers were mad. But the thing that happened afterward was that Max Verstappen's mom got on Instagram and was like accusing Checo of sleeping around and having an affair on his wife. And there were photos of Checo with a different person who was not his wife. All of a sudden, like those two things clicked in my head. And I was like, hold on a second. You're telling me that we just need to have this Checo Perez aside to talk about how much he loves his family when, like, one of the bigger dramas that we don't touch on in Drive to Survive is the fact that Max's mom said that he cheated on his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. That was rough.
Interesting.
And we specifically have the quote from Checo that's like, my family is everything, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's safe to assume that with a lot of drivers like Max Verstappen, the world champion, kind of closing off access to Netflix, that DTS is kind of afraid of losing more access.
Yes, definitely.
So obviously, not going to touch that drama with the 10-foot pole. I don't think the missile attack at the Saudi Grand Prix gets covered at all. That seems like a pretty big thing. I would like to hear some driver opinions on missiles falling close to the track. That would be very interesting.
Especially because they had that huge driver meeting about the safety.
Yes.
Like, that was fascinating. We haven't seen something like that since, like, the 80s.
Yeah, that was a huge moment of last season.
And it didn't even happen in Drive to Survive.
It's not a stretch to assume that Netflix wants to secure as much access as they can by kind of appeasing and ignoring these dramas.
I also felt very validated by this episode, as uncomfortable as it was to watch, like, all the way through. I felt very validated because you'll recall, like, 3 weeks ago, I said that Red Bull hired Daniel Ricciardo as a threat against Checo because Checo is, like, kind of getting mad at Max for not helping him when it doesn't even matter. And y'all were like, conspiracy corner. Not a conspiracy at all, because if you watch episode 7 of Drive to Survive, Christian Horner says at one point, if he's not delivering the results about Checo, we'll see what we're going to have to do about that. Yeah. He says this at one point. And then at another point, Christian Horner gets asked if Checo is happy. And he said, he knows his job. Okay.
Yeah.
And then Christian goes off and hires Daniel Ricciardo. It is very obvious in this episode that Daniel Ricciardo is a threat. And that's all.
I think you're
totally
on the money. But also, it's like Checo is, I mean, yeah, he had some bad races last year, but also he was in contention for second place. I don't know how much more you want him to deliver.
I also thought they over-exaggerated his bad races. I thought they really over-exaggerated that.
There were some bad races.
I mean, there were
some bad ones, but...
But they focused on those a lot.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those very uncomfortable episodes, I think. Like, there were a couple of them, including the next one that we'll talk about, that I was just like, is that the way that it happened?
Okay, but let's get to the next one, because I thought the next one had many redeeming qualities.
Yes.
This is my favorite episode of the season. Like I said, episode 3, 5, and 6 are probably the best in terms of storytelling and everything, but this is my favorite because we get a very deep profile on a lesser highlighted driver. This is Alpha Male, which focuses on AlphaTauri, Yuki Tsunoda, and the Japanese Grand Prix, as well as Austin. I love this episode. You know, Yuki Tsunoda was kind of a standout driver of last season's Drive to Survive in his on the AlphaTauri episode. You know, we learned that Yuki does not like exercise. He is kind of, they made him look pretty lazy compared to Pierre Gasly. And this episode is kind of his redemption tale, a part two to that episode, if you will. We see that Yuki has matured more. He's still farting in the car. He's still a cantankerous hothead that swears a lot. As we discussed earlier, you can't really tell a lot about a driver by what they say behind the wheel in stressful moments. You know, this is really great. So Franz Tost, you know, he says about Yuki that he is impatient and undisciplined still. He has to show he's matured. But I think this episode makes the case that he has, or at least he's on his way up in the maturity department. Also, we get a little look at Nyck de Vries. We get to see his point scoring run at Monza when he stepped in for Alex Albon at Williams And we get to see Nyck DeVries come into the team when Pierre Gasly goes to Alpine. I just really love this episode.
I love the episode. I love the camaraderie between the teammates. And it actually like kind of made me, not kind of, it really made me sad that they're not going to be teammates next year. Because part of it almost felt like Pierre Gasly was the shield that Yuki Tsunoda needed to have between him and the team.
Yes.
Like, Pierre was absorbing the criticisms and, like, filtering them back to Yuki in a way that wasn't like, hey, Yuki, you suck. Yeah. Get it together. We're going to fire you. Because, I don't know, that's the vibe that I've always gotten from AlphaTauri regarding Yuki Tsunoda is, like, they're just kind of barely keeping him signed because they didn't have anyone else to sign. And when they introduced Nyck DeVries, like, and they talked about DeVries' maturity, I was like, Yuki's absolutely going to be the second driver again next year.
I think
Nyck DeVries is a rookie, but he's a FIA world champion in Formula E. He's scored points on his debut with Williams. Like, he's going to take that from Yuki, and it kind of was, it made me a little bit sad. Like,
but like,
I
Nick
really
also,
like Yuki.
Nyck also really played into this because he had one monologue where he was really critical of Yuki's maturity. Like in the Drive to Survive hot seat, he was talking about Yuki's maturity, and it was really interesting to just like kind of watch him feed into that. But I mean, you know, Formula One is politics, and if you can do politics on Drive to Survive, then I guess go for it.
I think you guys are both totally on the money. And Liz, to your point about Pierre, I think that actually shows a side of Pierre that we don't really get through the race broadcast when it comes to being a leader at AlphaTauri, particularly because AlphaTauri themselves were a pretty midfield car, to say the least. Yeah. But we saw flashes of brilliance from both drivers. But yeah, shielding Yuki and just being that older brother that he describes himself as to Yuki Tsunoda comes through so strongly in this episode. But what also comes through strongly is the edit of the Austin Grand Prix and showing Yuki's aggression. That does give me a lot of optimism for Yuki next season. If he has more races like that, like I'm fully on board the Yuki Tsunoda train right now. I don't know if the car is going to deliver for him, but like I want to see him prove himself this season so he could work his way up to a faster car, because just with this Austin edit alone, sure, it is a chop down, basically a highlight reel, but I mean, he pulls off some pretty dope passes.
Yeah.
Some pretty, we'll say long bombs, you know, deep dives into corners and stuff, but I mean, that shows the kid's skill.
My two main parts of this episode were, one, the Yuki and Pierre relationship, and I think they really established that Pierre met Yuki when Pierre was several years older, of course, because Pierre's like 25 or 26, Yuki is 22, I think. So Yuki was in a junior series when they met, and Pierre does take on this kind of mentor role for Yuki. And it was really sad when they were talking about Pierre leaving and going to Alpine, and Pierre says, Yuki is special. I've never met someone like him before. And I was just like, this is so sweet. I know, I really enjoyed their relationship and just like getting more of an insight into that. And I think the second really big thing in this episode to me was Suzuka and how they edited Suzuka. And you know, overall, I thought the Suzuka edit showed a new depth to how wild it was. So if you watched Suzuka last year, particularly if you were on the Western Hemisphere, it was supposed to start at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it didn't start until like 3 o'clock in the morning because it was pouring and it was torrential. It was awful. They could not go. They ended up starting the race, and as soon as they start the race, no one can see. There's so much water. It's everywhere. Everyone's wrecking, going off into all these different places. It's a nightmare right away. And I thought the Drive to Survive edit gave it more depth than even I saw when watching it live, because watching it live, it was chaotic. It was awful. And all the breakdowns afterward, but we got all these radio messages and all of these onboards and just like a new level of understanding for how chaotic that start was when no one could see. But the glaring thing, like this was a very good recap of what happened, and then they ruined it by leaving out probably the most important thing that happened the whole time, which was Pierre Gasly is going around the track and he sees a tractor on the track, and this goes badly, Elizabeth.
So back in 2014, there was another incident at Suzuka where it was raining. The conditions were very dangerous, and a tractor was on the track. In that instance, the Marussia of Jules Bianchi slid beneath that tractor, and that ultimately resulted in Jules Bianchi's death. Jules Bianchi was great friends with Pierre Gasly. Obviously, Pierre Gasly was irate when he saw this tractor on the track. He took it back. He got in trouble. The FIA kind of slapped him on the wrist. He was admittedly driving very fast, probably faster than the conditions should have allowed. However, the fact that there was a tractor on the track, on the racing line, was an issue.
And it was the FIA's fault.
It was the FIA's fault, and it was not brought up a single time. And again, this was something, this was one of those moments in the show where I felt really let down, I think, and felt like this was a very PR-friendly move for the series. I understand why they didn't do it, but I disagree wholeheartedly with it. Like, if they had put the AlphaTauri episode at literally any other race, I would have probably forgiven it. But the AlphaTauri thing that happened at Suzuka was this.
Was the tractor.
And they just didn't talk about it.
And they didn't talk about it at all. And this feeds back into, we are doing these kind of PR-friendly narratives. You know, we've had a couple of negative narratives in this season because you have to do that. It's reality TV. We need some negativity. But that negativity has been focused on things that were not F1 or the FIA's fault, like the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There's no fault to F1 or the FIA about that. But here we have this tractor on track that is their fault. And there was a lot of controversy after this happened because the FIA punished Pierre for driving too fast, which, yeah, you can agree with that. But they did that in retaliation to Pierre saying stuff about the tractor and bringing up Jules and his death. Yeah. Like, this was in retaliation, and it was a horrible look, and Drive to Survive did not mention it once. Wild.
That put such a sour taste in my mouth. Like, I'm still actively mad about it.
Yep. Yep, I agree. And it's really unfortunate, because I don't think that should have been the case.
Episode number 9, Over the Limit, which focused, again, on Christian Red Horner, Bull. Red Bull, and spending caps.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Ooh, man.
I had a little game with myself where I just like tried to figure out how many times Christian Horner said catering. I ultimately lost count. So if you don't know about Red Bull's spending, Red Bull was found to have broken the cost cap in 2021. And this came out late last year. And this comes out and Red Bull's defense was that they spent too much money on catering. And so ultimately it didn't affect the performance of the car. But in this episode, you have the very logical counter argument, which everything is a counter argument with this. You went over the, like, you broke the rule. Like, that's it. Like, you brought a freaking Corvette to a Miata race. Like, you know, you broke the rule, ultimately.
Don't you think Mercedes also would have liked to spend a lot of money to host guests? They probably would have.
And don't you think that spending money on good food, I mean, I know that would affect my performance, too.
Well, and so...
And it also, as a sponsor, it would affect my goodwill toward the team.
Yes. And so, ultimately, the argument is, so what? We went over the budget cap by like a few a few hundred thousand dollars. It was on catering. But everyone else makes the argument that your few a few hundred thousand dollars that you went over on catering went to the car because you went over. Like, it doesn't matter where it came from. The entire budget is over. Therefore,
you still ultimately spent more money on the car.
Exactly. You ultimately spent more money. And so that is what this episode is about. And Christian Horner just keeps saying, catering, 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 the whole episode.
I don't know. This one, I watched it twice and I hated it both times. I think just because the whole like drama fiasco of this was so annoying. Like, it was one of those really petty dramas that, like, having to hear Christian Horner talking about, like, how it's so bad that you're bringing up the fact that we cheated, because actually we didn't cheat, because you have to mean to cheat to cheat. And we didn't mean to. And also, you're impacting our mental health.
Specifically, that comment was targeted toward Zach Brown. So they did this letter. It basically said Red Bull cheated. And Zach Brown was kind of the ringleader on this letter. Mm-hmm. And Christian Horner says Zach Brown's letter was a mental health threat to his team. And I'm like, like, this again, this just goes back to like people who went to therapy once and learned the terms and now they just use them incorrectly about everything. And it's just like, Like Christian Horner is over here like, you're gaslighting me. You're gaslighting. Like, you don't even know what that means. You don't even know.
You're gaslighting us, Christian.
Like, you don't even know what that means. It was rough.
Where would you put this? Where would you rank this episode in the 10 of this season?
I think it's got to be the worst for me.
It might be the second or third worst for me. I was really struggling with the Mick Schumacher portrayal. Mm-hmm. And I was also really struggling with the goodbyes in the final episode, which we'll get to. So yes, this is probably second or third for me. Yeah.
There were redeeming moments for me, at least in the last episode, and like really funny quotes and things that I enjoyed about that one. And the Mick one, okay, yeah, I can hear. I think this is probably then tied for last with the Mick one.
Yes.
Just because, like, part of it is, like, I just don't care. This was one of those things where it was, like, the drama of it was obviously manufactured, even in the media and the way that the teams were talking about these things, especially Christian Horner. It was, like, I just didn't feel like I needed to go over this one again. I know it was important.
But it was rough.
But I was over it. Like, I just can't cope with the fact that Christian Horner does not see himself as ever doing any wrong. Like, I just, buddy, it's okay. Like, when he admits to the cost, it was like, well, I guess we broke the cost cap. You guess? No, you guess. Did. Like, they got, you did. You're in trouble. You got fined for it. You did it.
You know, what I thought was really weird was, like, we told the story of the cost cap through Christian Horner's lens, which is admittedly hilarious. But what was really weird was he kept framing it as, we filled something in wrong. It wasn't about the car. It was this and this and this. Yeah. It was a miscalculation. We filled in the sheet wrong. And it's like,
there were literally teams who filled out their sheets wrong.
Yeah.
And they got in trouble for it, but it was an actual legitimate error. You spent your money.
Filling out the sheet wrong is like putting extra devices on the car. Like, you filled out the car wrong. You know, you filled out the sheet wrong. Like, at the end of the day, you still did it wrong.
I just don't think this episode super interesting. So I think we should move on to the final episode of Drive to Survive Season 5, End of the Road, which focused on Abu Dhabi and I think opened with George Russell describing his hotel room, saying he has 4 single beds in it.
I laughed out loud.
Yeah, that was a very really unintentionally funny. Maybe it was intentionally funny from George. I feel like over the course of watching this, I get the sense that George, he cracks jokes here and there, but he can be legitimately funny. Last season, I kind of thought he was kind of just like a posh whatever dude, yeah. But now I actually do kind of like him. I do like him.
I really
I like
George his Russell. Portrayal in this season. Yeah. I thought he reminded me a lot of like a kind of like mid-50s, like middle-aged older man.
That's how he dresses, for some reason,
like that's how he dresses, but that's also like his sense of humor. Like when he sits down in the first episode or in the second episode and someone has provided him with breakfast, he's like, oh, me and all my friends?
Yeah, yeah. Because
he's sitting by himself.
That's
like,
pretty funny.
That's a dad joke.
Yeah.
That was, I
liked
him.
Well, also, I mean, going back to episode 2, a theme through that episode is George Russell kind of being overshadowed by the goat that is Lewis Hamilton. Like, there's that moment at the autograph table where he's like, oh, everyone's waiting for Lewis to get here.
It was funny.
I think I do think that George Russell is self-aware. Anyway, getting back to the final episode here.
It was so weird.
It was a weird closing episode, but that's also because the challenge of making this show, like, the championship was decided races before this episode. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like the 2021 season where it was down to the wire. Is this like, it's like, what do we make out of this season where it's like, okay, I guess we have to like close off, we have to, you know, tie off some loose ends with the Alpine team beating McLaren to fourth.
There were so many things left out of this season and out of this episode. Like, we didn't talk about the Alfa Romeo team, aside from...
Did they choose not to participate? Like, I was so confused. We didn't see them.
Yeah, Williams also wasn't part of it. The Alpine team, like, Fernando got some lines and stuff, and Otmar was kind of the star, but like, did Esteban Ocon exist? Who knows? And
also, I think he has like one or two lines in this series.
I would say one of the like defining feuds of last year was just like the devolving nature of Esteban Ocon and Fernando Alonso's relationship at Alpine.
That would have been pretty interesting.
We didn't even cover that. There was nothing. Yeah. The only thing we got was, I believe it was in this final episode, they were doing a fan appearance, and Esteban said, he's happy to go. And Fernando was like, nah. And Esteban was like, you are happy to go. And he was like, I'm happy to go. Better car.
Yeah, that was such a fun feud. And there was also nothing about Aston Martin at all.
Yeah.
Aside from Lawrence Stroll looking extremely posh.
Oh, yeah.
But like,
but we didn't see Lance.
I don't think we saw Lance once, and we saw Sebastian a handful of times, but I think Sebastian's main contribution was regarding Mick Schumacher and Michael Schumacher, and that was pretty much it. And, like, he's retiring, and he's one of the biggest figures in the sport, and I'm pretty sure he declined to participate. I'd have to double-check on that one just to make sure, but it was still very weird that we got this, like, in memoriam for Daniel Ricciardo.
It was like Daniel this died.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was literally like Daniel Ricciardo had died.
Yes.
And then, but it's like, he's still going to be around. And then we get Sebastian Vettel, who's like, he's actually legitimately leaming, and it was like, he's gone. Bye.
Early mention. All we got from Sebastian was they basically asked him, like, is it hard to retire from Formula One? And he was like, I don't know yet. I'm not retired. Like, I'll know next year.
I've got my headband on.
That was all
That's what's
got,
going on right now.
Absolutely wild, because in the past few years, we have seen this transformation of Sebastian Vettel into this, like, human rights and environmental rights and everything, like, supporter. And even if Sebastian wasn't, like, participating in the hot seat, or he wasn't interesting or whatever, you could have had other people talk about that. And also, like, it was just weird.
We talked to Mick Schumacher, and Mick mentioned Sebastian and how much of an influence he was, and again, we just, like, glossed over
and it. Another thing was, like, we talked about Alfa Romeo was pretty much not in here, which is wild, because Valtteri Bottas has become, like, a fan favorite. Everybody loves this guy. And with Joe's crash,
I got a bone to pick. They showed Joe's Silverstone crash multiple times. They brought that race up multiple times, and they did, like, the cringiest, like, they showed it the first time and, like, made this big thing about it,
like,
in the episode, in the second episode,
and
with
then
George
they had
Russell.
Him walk
yeah.
in.
Oh,
he's like, I'm alive.
Like, I literally, like, made the wank off motion at my TV.
It was,
I, like,
awful. And then
what was that?
And, you know, so maybe we don't know everything that went on behind the scenes. Maybe they said, hey, Joe, would you like to talk about this crash? And he was like, no, I'm not in a place where I can talk about it yet. Maybe that was the case.
Yeah.
But we don't,
it's very,
like,
likely.
We don't know. And it was just, it was weird. And did we see Valtteri once in the hot seat?
I don't think so.
I don't think we even saw him in the background.
Like, I don't even think he was in the background.
Both those guys got a lot of screen time last season. And I think that's another aspect of the challenge of making the show, is that not only, I mean, we're trying to cover this sport that has a finite number of athletes. We want to give every athlete the same amount of time, but also we don't want every season to be a carbon copy of the previous one. So, I mean, last season we saw a lot of Valtteri Bottas, and that really explored the pressure of being Lewis Hamilton's teammate. So, I think that's part of it, and I do believe watching last season that I came away thinking, like, oh, Zhou Guanyu's actually kind of like a really cool guy, and then we don't see him this season. So I think that's part of it. That's why we get, like, a deep dive onto Otmar Schaffnauer, these other players who haven't got any screen time in previous seasons. Yeah, again, I just, really hard show to make.
They need to have a minimum runtime for each person. And they need to place that runtime strategically before they start building out the narrative for this and go, okay, we're going to have at least 2 minutes of each person, and we can strategically put them here, 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 and here based on our narratives per episode, and then build out the rest of the episode after that. Because it is really, really weird. I get that, like, you have to give other people airtime, but it's really weird when you have Sebastian Vettel's final season and we have more airtime of Mick Schumacher talking about Sebastian Vettel than Sebastian Vettel himself.
Yeah, that is a strange omission for sure. Yeah.
That was weird. And then we get this whole montage of Danny just, like, Danny over the years in like this filter, and it was just like, he's going to Red Bull. Like, mm-hmm. he will literally be replacing Checo in six races because Christian Horner gets mad. Like, he will be on the grid. It'll be fine. It was weird.
Strange closing episode.
It really underscored stuff we didn't get to see this season. Like, I would say one of the wildest things that happened, and one of the most exciting things that happened this season, was Kevin Magnussen getting a pole in a Haas car. Yeah. And Haas, you'll remember the trajectory of Haas. Haas enters the series in 2016. Everybody's like, this is the American hope. We've got this, even though they don't have any American drivers. Woo. They do okay for a couple of seasons. And then they have this like career best, like best of the rest. It was fifth, I believe, in 2018. Like wild. Haas is the next best of the rest, right? And then they just tank for a couple of years, barely score any points, nothing's going on. This is the resurgence of Haas, and we got nothing about it. Not a single thing.
And we talked about Kevin Magnussen too. Like, it wasn't like they didn't talk about him. It was like he had a triumphant return, and we covered the beginning of that, but not the end. And I also thought, like, I don't know, when they finished the Mick Schumacher episode, they ended it with this, like, up in the air, we don't know who's, like, we don't know if he's coming back or not. And it felt weird to, like, kind of get to the very end, and they're like, yeah, he's gone. Yeah,
Nico Hülkenberg is back. And
yeah,
he's brought back because he's so handsome, is the joke you made. I don't know, weird episode to close it with. The only note I took was that Lando Norris doesn't like chocolate for some reason.
Oh, I had a Lando Norris note. Lando was wearing a Palm Angels t-shirt.
Yes! Palm Angels. I tried to find it online,
and it is not currently listed on the Palm Angels website, but t-shirts like it go for more than $200 a piece. Yeah,
that makes sense. I don't know. Lando also comes off as like a pretty unsympathetic person over the course of the season too. He's like, yeah, Daniel's leaving, but you know what? This is how it is. Overall, guys, what do you think about this season of Drive to Survive?
Drive to Survive to me is entertainment. Like, it's fine. I didn't come away with it like super upset. I wasn't like getting mad at it as it was happening, because I feel like there was a time in my life where I would have let this bother me and been like, wow, they did a real disservice to a lot of storylines, and like been mad at it. But I don't have the time or energy to care that they messed up storylines that badly. I watched it for entertainment. It was fine. It gave me a nice little recap of last year. I remembered some funny things that happened, and then it ended. And that was kind of how I felt.
See, I was the opposite. I was emotionally invested and angry.
Elizabeth still has passion.
Yeah, I'm riding the high of being mad about this, and I will continue to be mad about this. I am a certified hater. That is my job title. That is what I am. I also don't have the time or energy to be upset about this, but I still am. I think as a writer, like, the thing that bothered me was those storyline issues. Like, I understand that there are going to be certain things you aren't supposed to talk about because you're supposed to be promotional material for Formula One. I understand that there are things that you just don't want to talk about, or that are too challenging, but it also felt very, there was a lot of disingenuous framing that happened this season that, just from the perspective of a writer, like, I wouldn't be happy with that outcome. I wouldn't be happy with the way I told the story.
Drive to Survive to me is really strange because it comes out, historically, it's come out the week before the season starts. Therefore, people only have like a week max to watch it before it becomes old news, frankly. So for me, it's when it first started, it's like, oh, that's one of my favorite shows. And now it's kind of just like, I still enjoy watching it. I'll watch it probably every time they put a season out. But it's like a thing that happens over the course of a weekend before the season starts for me. Yes. You know, it's like less of a show and more of just like an event, I guess, I have to participate in because this is what everyone's gonna be talking about for the next 3 days or so, and I have to discuss it or whatever, and then the season starts and I kind of forget about it. It will be very interesting when the show eventually does end to go back and watch it maybe 10, 20 years from now and see how it works as a time capsule of these seasons rather than just a discussion event of social media.
I think that has a lot of value. Like, even though they get stuff like wrong in portrayal and they leave stuff out. I always go back to the fact that when Elizabeth and I wrote Racing with a Trinergy, I was like, we have people ask, like, would you have rather done this 10 years from now and get more answers? Or would you have rather left those questions unanswered? Like at the end of the book, we talk about the unanswered questions. And I always respond that I'm glad we did it now because there are storylines that we wouldn't be able to get in 10 years. And I wish someone had done this for other events in history, like the Moneytron F1 sponsorship that ended up being kind of a worse nightmare than Rich Energy. I wish someone had done that at the time. So I feel like my contribution for Drive to Survive is not saying like, oh, I think it's played out. I think they should stop. I think all of this. I would like to see him keep doing it. I like having these time capsule things that you can refer back to, even if it's not totally right or we're not totally satisfied with it. It is cool to be able to look back on these things.
All right. So that was Drive to Survive season 5. Let's talk about some on-track action at preseason testing.
All right. So we had preseason testing take place last week, a 3-day round in Bahrain. We talked in our previous episode about how it's really difficult to actually divine anything from preseason testing. So if you want to go back and listen to that, I highly recommend it. That being said, we're just going to run through a few of the quick big points as we head into our first race weekend in Bahrain based on the things that we saw on track, which mainly is that Red Bull was the fastest and seemed to be pretty reliable. They didn't have any significant issues. Ferrari and Mercedes, yet again, were just behind them in terms of speed. We might have some Mercedes reliability. We might have some Ferrari reliability issues. Those will come out when we get to Bahrain for the actual race. Aston Martin actually looked very fast.
Yes.
And could compete with Mercedes to get into the top three, which was fascinating. And we're also, it looks like we're set to have an incredible midfield battle.
Oh, yeah.
Haas was really reliable, didn't have any significant issues, and they have two very reliable drivers. Alpine did not look perfect, but the insiders at the team seemed really, really happy. And Alfa Romeo was a lot faster than we were expecting, with Zhou Guan Yu fastest on day 2. That's exciting if we can actually see those teams competing with each other and with the top teams.
I'm so excited for Alpha to do well this year. And then we don't mention it once on Drive to Survive next year.
Williams has improved its reliability pretty significantly. It's probably still going to be at the back of the grid just because that's the way life works.
Just not as far back.
Just not as sad. AlphaTauri may be hiding that they're not succeeding. We are not really sure, but McLaren was, I think, probably the biggest loser of testing. They had a whole bunch of issues, but McLaren is known for kind of getting it all together and producing a competent package for the first races of the season. So who knows? If I was a betting man, I'd go ahead and put my bets on Max Verstappen winning the championship again.
Yeah. Easy.
Yeah, you know, after this testing, I didn't really pay too close attention to it besides watching, like, the highlights on YouTube and whatever. I didn't really put a lot of stock into this stuff. But yeah, Red Bull coming back, they look confident as ever. I mean, their car dominated last season. It's probably gonna do that again, maybe. We'll see. Yeah.
If you don't have to do a lot of work over the off season and you can just perfect, that's
exactly
a great thing.
My big prediction is, I mean, I think we're going to see just a slugfest between Alpine and Aston Martin for that number 4 spot. I think that's going to be the fight to watch this season. I think Otmar Schnaffenauer has done a really great job despite the setbacks over the course of last season. I think he's done a really good job building this program up and building momentum with his 4th place finish in 2022. And Aston Martin is coming with Fernando Alonso now and a car that seems like really badass. So that's going to be a really interesting fight to watch. I can't wait to see what kind of racing that produces.
The wildest thing to me about Formula One, and I have said this before, is that everyone settles into a role so quickly and they settle into a pattern so quickly. And we're already seeing this from preseason testing. It's absurd. Red Bull's like, yeah, we're great. We are awesome. We are so fast. And Mercedes is like, yep, no, not this year. Again, it's bad. Like, it's It's actually wild how quickly they settle into these patterns and just accept them as reality. Like Mattia Binotto, I honestly believe that the public conversation around him and the fact that Ferrari settled into its role as the complete screw up last year, I think that is one of the main reasons that Mattia Binotto was kind of forced to leave that role, because everyone just settles into their thing and just does that for the rest of the year. No one believes in personal growth throughout a Formula One season. Like, everybody's just like, all right, this is where we're at. Better luck next year. It's absurd, honestly.
I am toxic and I refuse to grow.
But like, am I right? Am I right? Like, we are,
you are correct.
We've already settled into the patterns. We know what's going to happen. And it's, yeah. They usually wait until the first race at least, but they have not waited this year. They are all about it. It's weird.
All right, so thank you so much for listening to the Donut Racing Show. We're going to be back next week. Race week, that's right. We're going to talk about all about what happened at the Bahrain Grand Prix. Elizabeth and Alanis are going to be in studio in Los Angeles, so it's going to be a fun one. Follow everybody on social media. Follow the show at Donut Racing Show. Follow Elizabeth at Aliz_Blackstock on Twitter and Aliza Blackstock on Instagram. Follow Alanis at Alanis N. King on both, and follow me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like. Big thank you to our producers this week, Christina Felsky and Gavin Kinzel. You've heard those names before if you're a Past Gas listener. Oh yeah, that's right. We have another podcast called Past Gas. It's an automotive history show. Make sure you give that a watch. And we'll see you next week after the race.
Bye.